It's time for Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, the greatest automotive podcast in the known world with Ron Foreman, Brady Wright, and Steve Johann. Let's find out what's going on this week. Oh, here's what's happening. It's Tuesday, July 7th, 2020. Brady Wright, Ron Foreman, your host, Steve Johann, the producer, joining millions of listeners on this 144th episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. We're on iTunes, we're on iHeart Podcast, Spotify, of course, Podomatic.com, as well as Stitcher, and TuneIn, and Player FM, and Podbay, and CastBox, and
Pandora.
Gazornenplatt, and Pandora. Who knows where we are? We're everywhere. Thanks
we're
for
in Everett.
We're in Everett. And that's the most important of all.
Yes.
Thanks for liking and following our Facebook page. We appreciate that for all the latest shows. They're right there for you. Plus, right now, our first segment on this show is, as always, Back to the Blacktop. Steve has automotive news and information, and nothing this week, nothing is made up at all. It's all absolutely true.
Well, there's never anything. Well, I shouldn't say that, but there's hardly anything ever made up.
Never a dull moment.
Never mind. I won't go that way.
There you go.
While new vehicle sales in the U.S. continue to lag due to the shutdown, used car sales are posting much better results. Last month, new car sales fell nearly 30%, while used cars jumped 17%, but that's after dropping 38%. So we are supportive of the numbers, but the overall sales are down as we would expect. And I was reading some posts. Bottom line is what's going to happen is people are going to hold on to their cars a lot longer. I mean, when 2008 hit and all that entailed, people held on to everything longer. People
sure.
didn't buy things. They fixed things up, which bodes well for SEMA and anybody who's involved with the aftermarket parts, because people are going to be fixing their cars and keeping them on the road longer, which means really good news for aftermarket parts.
Well, and finally,
parts.
Most of the manufacturers have seen fit to make a car that's going to last a couple hundred thousand miles.
Oh, my gosh.
As opposed to the
right.
50, you know, that we had in the 80s.
That's right.
So, yeah, it's a good deal all the way around.
It is. And as you know, we have been keeping abreast of the new Ford Bronco lineup coming to a dealership near you. Well, good news. On 13th, you will be able to see it plastered everywhere.
July 13th.
All brand right. new featured. Classic starts out with three versions. First is the two-door classic, as everybody
right.
is well
okay.
aware. Very boxy.
Yes.
The X is a four-door version, and the smaller sport utility version, SUV. So my question is this rebadged SUVs that Ford already has in line?
The Bronco wouldn't fit.
But
it's a smaller than the Edge. It wouldn't. I mean, they couldn't use that chassis.
But
it's way bigger.
They're coming into two different other versions.
Yeah, but even so, the chassis is going to be the same within, you know, a 4-inch
extension. You're thinking that way.
Well,
have not seen the picture.
But, I mean, that's just it. The Bronco was always a small to mid-sized
yes.
SUV. And the Edge, for example, is, you know, which is their full-size crossover.
Right.
That's long. It's 109 inches.
Right.
And the Bronco was always shorter than
and
that.
And their, what, Expedition is
lots
like...
That's a truck. I mean, that's a
that's
huge...
That's the full-size
yeah,
truck. Yeah.
So, I
same
mean, they're,
size as
they're
Suburban,
not gonna,
I think.
Yeah.
It's even bigger.
Yeah, they wouldn't make it on an
F-150 yeah.
chassis.
No.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, it'll be interesting because next week we will do the reveal and we'll see the actual images of
maybe
the products.
Maybe they'll rebuild the Explorer and call that.
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
Well,
I don't know.
That's fun. I'd like to see.
But staying with Bronco, word has it that Ford is teaming up with Disney to help spread the word when it launches the new Bronco SUV later this month, renewing a partnership that dates back to almost six decades.
It's the new Bronco.
Oh, I know.
Hello, Pluto.
So then I was thinking, so does this also mean that it will offer a two-door Bronco in the latest Bond movie like they did in Goldfinger? Remember in Goldfinger, they came out with, they had featured the Ford vehicles. They had the sedans.
Oh,
they had the Ranchero.
The Bond franchise will have fallen if they go from an Aston Martin to a Bronco. No.
Oh, they had. Did you see
AMCs.
Some of the cars that they had
AMC
later on?
Back in the,
oh,
back
my
the,
gosh.
They had
it got
Audis,
really
they had, yeah.
Matador
yeah.
that flew.
Well, that's right. They did have a flying Matador.
Well, speaking of Goldfinger.
Yes.
Well, here's some very cool news. Of all things, Aston Martin is putting out a brand new revamped version. It's an exact replica of the DB5.
Of course.
Featured in the James Bond Goldfinger movie.
Yeah. Nice.
Job number one, DB5, represents not only another significant design and engineering success, but also becomes the first DB5 to be built by Aston Martin in more than half a century.
So you said job number one.
Yep.
So I wonder, I mean, it's kind of odd that they would bring back a
it's
DB5.
It's only 25.
Maybe they'll call it the odd job.
Oh, there you go. Oh,
come on, come on, come on. Well, I went a long way for that.
Oh, yes.
We're on our bending needles waiting
for that. A new version of Bond coming out soon.
Here we go.
The odd job.
It's going to come with a removable top.
Don't forget the golden finger.
Hat.
Oh, I know. Well, the car is limited to 25 new cars.
I have no shame. I will do this.
Which are, now listen to this, which are meticulously detailed, authentic reproductions of the DB5 seen in the screen, with the same sympathetic modifications, enhancements to ensure highest level of build quality and reliability. All Goldfinger Edition cars are built to one with one exterior color, the original silver birch paint.
Right, perfect.
Just like the original. And yeah, here's a list of things to look forward to. A rear smoke screen delivery system. A rear simulated oil slick delivery system.
Simulated oil slick delivery system.
Revolving number plates, front and rear triple plates. Simulated twin front machine guns. Bullet resistant near shield. Battering ram front and rear. Simulated tire slasher. Removable passenger seat roof optional.
Uh-huh.
And then it's simulated radar screen track. A telephone and driver's door, great knob actuator, button, armrest, and center console mounted switch gear, underseat weapon storage tray, and remote control for gadget activities. And they're doing this because they're pairing up with a Hollywood company. And I think it's just amazing.
It's cool.
It's like a kit car.
Terrified.
Only John, James Bond.
I'm but terrified to ask how much it costs.
Oh, they did not say
that. Oh, come on. Come on.
They didn't say
no?
it.
Triple digit.
Oh, you've got to know, and it's only 25.
Yeah.
And it's already, I bet you they're already spoken for. I don't think you're going to see one
out
on the road.
They're only making 25 of them?
Only 25.
Oh, my gosh. They'll be through the roof.
They've pulled back the actual body works of wherever did, and they
made a buck.
Blueprint.
Yeah. I mean,
hot and cold running scotch.
God, that's just it.
We got to win the lottery.
Pizza and buy one of those things. I like it. Yeah, let's do that.
I mean, now, I have just gotten through watching the box set of James Bond from.
Oh, right
point
on.
One, all the way to the new
Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig.
Yep.
The first episode of that was in there. So the whole thing.
So Quantum of Solace.
Yes, Quantum of Solace. And what I noticed I have not watched any of the new ones.
I know.
Well, I started watching it, and I really started. I enjoyed the Sean Connery versions.
Of course.
Tongue in cheek, all the way, very swinging 60s, and all that stuff, and the way ladies were just. Phenomenal. And then it shifts, and then it goes to Moore.
Well, right. No, George Lazenby.
He was the first. George, yes.
Yeah. And Timothy Dalton, I'm sorry.
Actually, then it was Roger Moore, then Timothy Dalton.
Right.
Actually, I didn't mind Timothy Dalton. I thought he was a little more serious.
After Roger Moore.
Yeah, Roger Adultery. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Anybody would have been more serious than Roger Moore.
And look, they're driving around with semi trucks popping wheelies down the road.
Right.
I mean, they got
they
really
are.
Crazy.
Of course they are.
But they did
well,
land
a Bond movie. I mean,
it was. Mm-hmm. And then they went to Pierce Brosnan, and he came on, and they got a little better. I thought. A little more quality.
Well, the cinematography got better because they were starting to do, CGI and other stuff.
Well, and they were competing with Die Hard and that kind of thing. But what I did notice is when they came in with the Quantum of Solace, is that what it is?
Yep.
It definitely took a turn for the seriousness, and it was like, finally, they figured out, you're dealing with a psychopathic hitman. And who lives for a very short life and lives very fast. And
he was a trained assassin.
That's right. And when you deal with that, it is serious.
I never bought Roger Moore as a trained assassin.
No.
I bought him as a rodeo clown.
I think they've got a guy that really fits that bill right now. And maybe this car is going to show up in the newest one.
Well, we'll see. Hey, thanks for tuning in. Coming up on the Windshield View, we're going to check back in with racer Stefan Papadakis. He's been on the show before, and he's got more to say this year, and a new team member on his team, too. So we'll talk about that. Cartoons Magazine is back. You know those crazy car comics from the past. They've returned in the all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of brand new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine full of one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available at your local comic book store, newsstand, and directly through Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com. That's cartoonsmag.com, where you can subscribe to a whole year's worth of fun. Cartoons Magazine, there's nothing else like it.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I'm more resourceful than I thought.
My suit can still make an impression.
My video games are still game changers.
And my lamp can bring others a bright future.
Because when I donate my stuff to Goodwill,
it helps fund job placement and training for people right in my community.
Now my stuff gets a second chance.
And will give someone in my community
a second chance too.
Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. That's goodwill.org. This message brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light.
Hey, it's Hillary Nowak from Ink and Iron in Oakville, Ontario, Canada, and you're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. We can't help you with the horsepower, but we can definitely help you with the chrome and rust.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service.
Hi, it's Jeff Conwell with the Monsters and Manson, giving a big shout-out to everyone at Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
Horsepower Chrome is back, and with our first special guest this week is Stefan. How do you say that?
Papadakis.
Papadakis.
It's a good Irish name, right?
Welcome, Stefan.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, I have to be good with that because my wife is Greek, so it's got to be right, or I don't get to sleep in the house, you know. Hey, it's good to have you back. You were on our show a couple of months ago, and it seems like time has just rolled by. How's things going in your neck of the woods?
Going well. We're in a bit of a holding pattern right now. Our Formula Drift events were supposed to kick off in April, but they've been pushed back now to September.
Okay.
And instead of having 8 individual weekends, we're going to have 4 weekends. And each one of those weekends are going to have 2 of the rounds, a round on Saturday and a round on Sunday. And we'll still be able to get all of the 8 rounds in this year. And they're all set up to be... we'd like to have fans there, but if we're not able to do that, then we're going to do the events without fans.
Yeah.
And I'm still be on the live stream and on CBS Sports.
And I'm assuming that the Saturday, Sunday, the events are going to be geographically pretty close, if not at the same track, right?
They'll be at the same track. Yeah. So we're going to St. Louis will be the first weekend, and then Seattle, Washington, Dallas, Texas, and then Irwindale, California.
Oh, nice. So what weekend, since we're in Seattle, what weekend are you going here?
I want to say I don't have it directly in front of me, but I can look it up in a minute here.
Well, that's okay. Well, before the end of the show, we'll find out, and then we'll put it on the website because, you know, there's local fans here, and you're going
to
be at...
we'd love to be down.
Yeah. You're going to be Pacific Raceways?
Yeah, we'll be at Evergreen.
Oh, Evergreen. Okay. That's in Monroe. Okay.
Monroe. My neck of the woods.
26, 27.
Yep.
Nice.
Of what month?
September.
September.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. All right. Good. We'll be there. We'll come and hang out at your pits.
Yes.
Nice. So by way of kind of getting people familiar, I mean, obviously, Stefan's been on the show before, but, you know, Formula Drift is a thing that sort of got started in... Well, didn't get started in 2004, but that's when you joined up. And, you know, the V8-powered Scions and 1,000-horsepower Toyota Corollas, this is the kind of stuff that, I mean, people who follow drift understand and they know all about this kind of stuff, but people who don't, I mean, you are a career giant in terms of stuff that you have won and events that you've been kind of the signature to. And you started building way, way back as a young guy, didn't you?
I did, yeah. So I started off with drag racing, and we actually were running front-wheel drive Hondas at the time, you know, in the mid-90s or so. And that was the low-cost, easily acceptable, accessible type of racing I had to me.
Sure. Now, was that bracket racing at that point?
We were doing head-to-head. Up. So it wasn't the normal NHRA. We started we had like a Terminal Island Raceway here, and it kind of was a lot of the street guys kind of taking the street racing, but finally getting it onto the track. And then they had a lot of these import events like Battle of the Imports, NIRA, and a few very specific like import races. And the type of racing that I was into was the heads up, and it was like the fastest front wheel drive. Like we were breaking records on the quickest quarter mile with a front wheel drive driven cars.
Wow. And yeah.
It was
awesome.
Pure, right. Cause it's a four cylinder turbocharged front wheel drive was not the traditional drag racing combination.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, 1997.
And you had a ton of records. I mean, you were the first four wheel drive to break 150, break 160, 170, 180. You just kept racking it up. And, you know, I'm sure that's part of what did it. You're the first drag Honda to break 200 miles an hour. That was a rear wheel drive though. Yeah.
That was, yeah. So eventually the import scene got so big that they had an NHRA Sport Compact Series.
Yeah.
And then we started running in tandem with a few of the NHRA Championship Series events. And I was like, ooh, you know, there's an opportunity here. I think this may be really big. And instead of being in like the front wheel drive class, the thought was, let's just be at the most premier class in the Sport Compact Series, which was the rear wheel drive class, and we ran a V6 3.5 liter engine, twin turbocharged, that made 1600 horsepower.
Wow.
Yeah, and the
that's a lot for a car that weighs what, 2000 pounds tops?
Yeah, so well, when we got to that point, the chassis was a full racing chassis,
of course,
and it was the NHRA Pro Stock chassis car.
Got it.
So normally they ran, you know, 1400 horsepower, maybe 1600 or so, I think, at that time. But we had our Honda body on it with our V6 Acura NSX engine turbocharged. So a bit different power plant, but still the same transmissions and suspension tire design as they were already running in Pro Stock.
You know, I don't remember if I asked this the last time, but I'm going to ask it again because it fascinates me. A lot of cars, race cars, stuff that does, you know, high performance, that kind of thing, the life of the parts, the actual, you know, working life of a motor, a transmission, is pretty short. I mean, Top Fuel, of course, they rebuild them every time. But what kind of life do you get out of a motor and transmission doing that set of stuff? It's got to be hard on the steel.
Yeah, the engines were the most consumed part. The transmissions, you know, later on got pretty worked out because we started using more traditional transmissions that were relatively robust. Same with the clutches and such. But the engines, you're dealing with smaller displacement. You're really putting a lot of boost on them.
High RPMs.
Boost, and pushing them really hard. And even at the time, you know, in around 2004, 2005, when we were running this 1600 horsepower V6, fuel injected engines that were making, you know, 300 horsepower plus per cylinder.
Sure.
We were kind of on the leading edge of that stuff. Right. So it wasn't necessarily that the engines couldn't take it, is that we were learning how to build them to take it. So figuring out the pistons and the rods and the way they do the cylinders and the head gasket sealing. And I mean, it was as much as of a development vehicle as it was a racing car.
You just reminded me of that scene in The World's Fastest Indian where Art Monroe, I mean, you know, has blown up pistons in his bike, and he's got a big stack of them on the shelf on the wall, you know, sacrifices to the god of speed.
Well, you float heads pretty.
We still have that nowadays.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
I mean, you can float the heads if you're not careful because of the amount of pressure that you're putting in there. I mean, that's what starts going on. And you had to learn the different types of materials to work with. And because were you kind of like pushing the manufacturers in that area to come up with better product?
So we were using factory blocks and factory cylinder head castings. And regardless of our relationship with the factories, there wasn't availability to do bespoke castings.
Right.
The cost in that, it was just too much. So we had to work around that. And even today, that's something similar. But that's part of the challenge is saying, okay, well, this engine starts with, back then, you know, we were starting with a 250 horsepower engine and trying to make 1600 horsepower.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you know, we start with a 335 horsepower engine and try to make 1000. It's just part of the whole, it's part of the process. And I think that that's part of the attraction is it really is we're tuning these things, not necessarily building them from scratch as a bespoke racing engine, like a lot of the NHRA or drag racing engines. So if you do have a factory car, like right now, we just built a Toyota Supra. And if you've got a Supra or a Toyota, or if you have a Corolla, some of these Toyota products that we have, the engines that we're starting off with and the parts that are still that we still use are the same ones that are in the street car.
Nice. Now, one thing that we kind of touched on last time you were on the show, but we didn't really get enough time to sort of mess with it, was some of the other guys in your team. I mean, obviously it's your team, but you got quite a number of people there who are, you know, I want to say integral parts and big players, and you just got a new guy here this year, right? Ryan is, I don't know how to pronounce Ryan's last name. Is it Twerk?
Ryan Turk.
Okay, we're going to take a break here in just a minute. We're going to come back and talk about some of the other guys in your team, because Frederick, Sean, and Aldo, and now you got Ryan on there. It's quite the organization these days, and I guess those guys are hauling their weight as well, right?
Yeah, we definitely have a lot of people when we go to the track nowadays.
Cool. Well, the Windshield View will be right back. We got more from Stefan Papadakis on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Hang on. You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
More Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust after these messages.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States.
You're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. This is Mark Green from Cars Yeah. I've got horsepower, I've got chrome, but I've got no rust.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the app.
Yes, we are. We're back in Vehicle City, and you're listening to the greatest automotive information show in the known world. And a great hot rod story you can share with your friends is coming up next on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. But first, we've got Stephen Papadakis on with us, and we wanted to come back to the newest addition of your team. And who was that just came on?
Yeah, Ryan Turk.
Yeah,
very cool.
He's been driving with Toyota for many years, and he's been running a Toyota GT86 drift car, and we've now brought him into the Toyota Corolla that we built. And so we're handling all of the crew and everything for Ryan this year, as we've moved Frederick Osbo out of the Corolla into a 2020 Toyota Supra.
Yeah, that's the rock star car, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Cool. I see. I know. I got.
Now, now, you build the cars mostly. Do you do any of the driving, or do you mostly stand behind it as the manager, the team manager? I've seen your videos. You're working on the engine. Tell us about your actual role there.
Yeah. So I used to drive and handle the team stuff as well years ago with the drag racing. As we transitioned into drift, you know, I tried to learn to drift, which I could get around the track, but I wasn't able to get to the highest level of the competition. But we, you know, at the shop, we did a good job of, you know, building the engines and building the cars. So the thought was, let's just, you know, work with the best drivers and we'll try to be the best car builders as we could, best team. And that turned out to be the best, the most competitive package.
So I know you got there's more than just Ryan, of course. Can we walk through some of the guys on your team, the drivers, and kind of what drew them to you or drew you to them? Because, you know, you got to recruit these guys, right? I mean, then it just kind of fall off trees.
So when we really transitioned into drift in 2006, we started working with Tanner Faust,
right?
Who he does a lot of rally stuff nowadays, stunt driving and everything, but. Initially he started off with, some stage rally stuff, at like, the showroom stock level. I don't remember what they called it, but he was also doing some drift. And that was right when the time in 2005, 2006, when Formula the Drift was really starting to pick up and starting, become very popular. And, so he drove a Nissan 350Z that we built. And then I drove a Honda S2000. We had a 2-car drift team.
Nice.
And, the first year he got third in the championship. I got like 15th or something like that. And then the second year I kind of stayed the same, but he won the championship. And
wow,
the following year he won the championship again. And then, in 2009, we started working with Toyota, or actually Scion, which was one of Toyota's brands.
Right.
And I wasn't really progressing as a driver. I was trying to run the team and then also drive. So I said, you know what, Tanner's such a good driver. Let's just focus on him. And then I stepped back from the driving and really focused on building the cars. And we worked with just Tanner for the next few years until he retired in 2011. And then we brought in Frederick Osbo, who was a rookie driver at the time, built him a new car, which was the second generation Scion TC in 2011. I think he won the championship in 2015. And we started expanding the team. A great driver named Jonathan Castro out of Dominican Republic had some sponsors and was doing the whole Form of the Drift series and really wanted someone to handle all of the car, building of the car and the logistics and everything. So we brought him on the team. He handles his own sponsorship and everything, but we handle all of the crew and maintenance of the car and everything. So we had a 2-car team. Starting in about 2015, 2016. And then, just starting this year in 2020, we've now brought Ryan Turek on, who's been driving with Toyota for many years in a GT86. But since we've moved Frederick into the 2020 Supra, the Corolla became available to drive. And then Toyota and Ryan both thought that would be great. Ryan drove that Toyota Corolla. So now we've got 3 cars, all very competitive that we handle at all the drift events.
That's pretty cool. And so now Sean Hillier and Aldo Villagran, are they still involved too?
They are. So we have a relatively small team.
Yeah.
That's around all year for all of the building of the car and everything. So it's myself, Sean, Aldo are the main guys, and then we'll bring in like Dominic, and we've had a couple other friends or great fabricators, like if we're building a car. And
right.
During the winter, if we're building a new race car, sometimes those guys that are the best at fabrication and the car building are not always the ones that you're traveling with to the different events and that are the best at wrenching on the cars and swapping tires and doing the crew stuff. So then when we expand at each event weekend, we'll typically have at least 3 people for each car. So we'll really expand, and it'll be Sean, Aldo, myself. We'll have our Mario will come in. We have Matt that drives the big rig and also helps with, you know, logistics and helps filming the different runs of the track. And then we have Mitch Terry and Mike, and a bunch of other guys that'll come in just for the weekends to help with the crew stuff.
Steven, Stefan, you said something about the filming. Do you like have a YouTube channel that people can go in and see your events and your races?
So we do. So we have a YouTube channel, and it's if you just look for Papadakis Racing on YouTube, you'll find, or even just 2020 Supra Build, probably a lot of our videos will come up.
Cool.
So that's something we've been really focusing on is a lot of the content creation. But when we're filming at the events, it's actually part of our helping the drivers to drive better.
I see.
Because it's a judge sport, it really matters what it looks like from the judging tower. So we'll get Matt up filming all of the runs near the judging tower, and we'll review all of the runs with the drivers to see what we can improve on to get better scores and then to eventually have better tandem runs and then hopefully better results.
Work it into technique.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, we data log the sensors and all the stuff on the engine, but we also, you know, want to see what the drivers want to see what they look like on the track.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I hadn't thought about that, but it's not just about getting around in a certain amount of time. It's also the fact that you're doing the way you're making the corners, where you're doing your actual action points. And so you're being judged on two criteria, then I take it, is getting around the track.
More than two.
And then also in style.
Yeah, so speed is actually, or time is not a factor. It's the line. So before each one of the rounds, the judges will talk and we'll have a whole driver's meeting, and they'll say, this is the preferred line, coming out really close to this wall, coming in towards this inner apex or clipping point, and then back out again. We want you to, like, let's say a big banked track, they want you to stay out to the wall as long as you can, have as much angle as you can at each one of those locations, and be fluid from side to side.
So it's precision driving.
Yeah, so having that combination of all of those things, like in qualifying or when you're leading in a tandem, is very important. And sometimes the drivers will feel they've done a really good job or feel that they've gotten very close to the wall or whatever, and the video is
a tool.
That's where the reality can kick in on what's really happening. And then they can go out the next round and work on those areas that they need to work on.
Okay, because that explains, because I've watched some of the events on TV, but I didn't understand that process. So now I'm going to be able to watch it and go, I get it. Now I understand why they're getting judged.
Yep. So on the track, so let's say there's an outer clipping or outer zone, and there'll be a cone at the beginning of the turn, and there'll be a cone at the end of the turn where the zone starts and ends. They want the car to ideally come out to that outer zone, so call it the edge of the track or the wall or whatever, and stay in that outer zone as long as possible between those two cones, and then you can come into the inner. And the qualifying really breaks down to who does those things the best, and they'll put everybody into an eliminations ladder just like drag racing. The top qualifier will be against the last qualifier, the second, you know, against the 31st qualifier, and that's the eliminations bracket. But the real competition is the tandem competition, and that's where the two cars are on track at the same time.
Hmm.
The lead car needs to do that prescribed best qualifying run, and then the chase car needs to mirror what the lead car is doing and try to stay as close in proximity as possible.
Right.
They'll do that run, swap positions. Now the car that was chasing now needs to do that best qualifying run, and the one that was leading needs to try to stay as close as possible. The judges will then determine who did a better job of both leading and chasing, and then they'll pick a winner that'll move on. If they can't pick a winner, then they'll do it one more time and have them do it again. And nowadays, the driving is so good and the skill level is so high that they're just, the leading car is doing almost a perfect qualifying run. The chase car is just right there with them. And they'll do one more time sometimes. And it was just so good, so impressive, the laps that they're doing. And the it's not that they were making mistakes necessarily. It's that they did such a good job, they couldn't pick a winner between the two. And the whole fan interaction gets,
that's awesome,
gets going, especially in the live event. And they'll just be like, one more time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to ask you something. This is either going to be a real success or it's going to make me look like an idiot, so be kind. Just before I came down here for the show, Stefan, I was watching Tokyo Drift, you know, Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. And I like that movie because I like watching the drifting. I think it's kind of, it's a cool thing to see. Now, I am not a drifter. I don't have the technology to be able to do it. I mean, I understand it, you know, intellectually, but as far as sitting in a car, nah, I probably couldn't do it very well. But I like that movie because there's an awful lot of shots of the actual racing where you can kind of see what you were just talking about. The question I'm going to ask you, and this is, I'm taking a leap here. I'm sure you've seen this movie. A, does that stuff, I mean, the actual racing in there, is that kind of the idea that you're talking about here? And B, is anybody you know one of the stunt drivers in that movie?
So I'll start with the second part. Yeah, a lot of the several of the drivers, like Tanner did, and Reese Millen and Sammy Hubinett, there are some ex-retired Formula Drift drivers that did.
Got it. I thought there must be, because it was pretty good.
There's a scene in Japan where I think the red Mitsubishi is drifting. Like, he's kind of learning how to drift.
Yeah.
At like one of the piers. And they paid homage to the original Drift King, who's supposed to be like one of the founders of the competition drift, a Japanese guy. They call him Drift King. But he was with a fisherman out there.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Watching. That's the actual Drift King guy.
That's cool. And how would you know?
But yeah, you know, there, a lot of those stunts, I mean, it's Hollywood, so they stitch a lot of individual stunts together.
Sure.
But besides the one where they're going up the ramp in the parking structure,
right?
Most of those are real driving stunts, and they're really drifting, and they'll just stitch a bunch of different corners together to make it look. Yeah, but yeah, they. I've talked to Tanner, who did. He drove one of the cars at the end. You know, where they're crashing into each other on that mountain road.
Right.
He said they're literally crashing into it. They did that, and he's like, the director's like, all right, no, hit harder.
Of course he did.
We're going to die out here. Is you sure this is what you want on your film? That's great stuff.
Yeah, and they filmed that out here. A bunch of the downtown Japan scenes, like it looked like downtown Tokyo or whatever, was filmed in downtown Los Angeles.
Right.
And I went out there on a couple of the nights when they did the filming, and it's really amazing how they'll have an intersection or a certain area of downtown, and they've blocked it all off, and they've changed the names on all of the stores.
Oh yeah,
they've changed the signs so it's Japanese signs. They've made a little piece of Tokyo in downtown Los Angeles.
Oh yeah, movie magic.
Yeah, and back then when they made that movie, there was less CG. There was definitely CG there.
Oh yeah,
but less than nowadays.
And right.
Nowadays, you know, maybe I don't know how they would do it now, but it was really impressive. And I was there for one of the big crashes, and they. In real Hollywood style, they had one of the cars going through the intersection and just slammed.
Just folded it up, right?
Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
And the stunt drivers had knee pads and all these things, but they, I think that's one of the reasons that movie's fun to watch is they really did a lot of those stunts.
Right.
Well, it's one of the things that I think makes that whole franchise kind of fun because you know you can do a lot with CGI, but. There's real cars getting bent up in those things. And even though we know it was controlled and we know that it was, you know, contrived in a lot of ways, it's still fun to see. You know, you can live vicariously and say, if only I was a completely different human being and you know, I could do that. But
so
it's pretty cool to see.
That kind of brings to mind, what is about the average lifespan of a racer in the sense of when they come in and when they retire from official racing? About what is the average length of time a person can stay within that framework of being very competitive?
I think as far as a driver goes and like physically, I don't see any reason why anybody would taper off too much. I think from the time that you're able to do it, like you're able to have the skills to drive, you know, maybe your mid-20s or whatever, I don't see any reason why you couldn't go into your 50s and be competitive.
Okay.
But just like most motorsports, you know, people will come in and they either have a lot of skill and a lot of history and they kind of build their way up, or they build their way up and eventually end up in some kind of sponsored program. Maybe they're getting paid, or there's other drivers that will come in and spend some money to go racing. And so you have both of those ranges of drivers.
You pretty much have to be the athlete to be able to drive those cars and be physically able to do that too as well. Is that right?
Yeah, one of the biggest things is they're sitting around in these really hot cars in the really hot sun sometimes, and it's in between the rounds that can be the most taxing, and then you just have to be ready to go.
We gotta man.
As usual, we could do this for another 2.5 hours.
Oh yeah,
Stefan, it's been great to have you on the show again. We're gonna have to do this again. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, let me know. I'm around.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Today we decided to walk to school. The light counted. 15, 14, 41,
31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Street. Danny's smart, but he gets distracted.
I realized
he forgot his homework.
I hope he doesn't have another bad day at school.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Go from misunderstanding to Understood.org.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Cartoons Magazine is back. You know those crazy car comics from the past. They've returned in the all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of brand new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine full of one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available at your local comic book store, newsstand, and directly through Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com. That's cartoonsmag.com, where you can subscribe to a whole year's worth of fun. Cartoons Magazine, there's nothing else like it.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States.
Hey guys, this is Carl with Garrett's Rod Shop on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And these guys are great, so listen up.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much.
For taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom. For taking you to your therapies. For understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving.
This is Vince LaViolette from Shelby American in Las Vegas, and you're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
It's time for Car Confidential, another story from Lance Lambert, and woohoo. Thank you, Brady. Let her rip.
Oh, yeah. I think Lance was ripped when he wrote this one. This is actually cool, and once again, it's Fenders, Fins, and Friends, one of Lance's greatest books, and this one, I actually was kind of hoping that we would get to this at some point or another. This is cool. It's called My Very First Car Club, and it just goes like this. Lance says, I've had two great passions since I was old enough to push a toy car on the kitchen floor, automobiles and clubs. Now, by the time I was 12 years old, I had started the Junior Fireman Club, the Junior G-Man Club, the Back Alley Boys, and the Oddballs. None of this surprises me.
No.
When I was 14 years old, I wanted to join the Toppers Car Club. They were the most active and respected car club in town. I was allowed to attend several of their meetings. However, they said I couldn't join until I was 16 and had a driver's license. So they did offer to help me start the Junior Toppers Car Club. But I felt that I was kind of beyond the junior stage by then, so I decided to start my own club. Now, most of my closest friends were as into cars as much as I was, so I recruited them to become charter members. There were six of us, aged 15 and 16, with two members owning cars. Bob Dylan had a 47 Hudson, and Greg Ealing had a 40 Chevrolet. It was the summer of 1962, and there we were, Greg Ealing, Bob Dylan, Jim Johnson, Doug Sparks, Dale Querry, and myself, sitting in my parents' garage. Now, first of all, we had to come up with a name for the club. I picked up an old copy of Ivanhoe, and I started...
Ivanhoe.
How many of you have a copy of Ivanhoe laying around your garage?
No.
Started glancing through the pages to see if anything jumped out at me. I saw the word steeds, and that was it. Steeds equaled horsepower and strength. It was perfect. So we agreed on the name and began the next steps in organizing a club, designing the club's emblem, car club plaques, and the club membership card. It soon became apparent that a better club name could have been chosen. People occasionally asked, Steve's Car Club? Who's Steve? Or, why a horse? Is it a 4-H club? In later years, people asked if we were a Mustang club. Our first emblem featured a T-bucket hot rod, but we quickly changed that to a more fitting horse's head and engine combination. We quickly overcame any name-related problems and became one of the largest and most active car clubs in town. We had a great-looking club jackets, several car show-winning vehicles, a club dragster later destroyed when it flew off the trailer and crashed into the new truck.
Oh.
And membership in the Northwest Car Club Council and the International Car Club Association. At any given time, there were usually about 15 active members in the club. The members' cars ranged from beater four-door sedans to a new Corvette. Some members, like me, were happy with cars that would get them reliably from home to the local drive-in and back again. Others were only content when they felt their car was the fastest on the boulevard. My contributions to the club's roster were mildly customized two-door Chevy Fleetline 48 and the lowered and rumbling 1954 Oldsmobile two-door hardtop. The Fleetline had a lowered front end and was partially rolled and pleated interior. The Olds was lowered 3 inches and had a leaded-in trunk lid. Of course, each car proudly displayed the club plaque in the rear window. I'm showing the picture of the Olds to Ron because Ron has one darn near that year.
Yep.
Yours is a 55, isn't it?
55.
55. So the majority of my attention during the high school years was divided between the club and my girlfriend. I couldn't wait for the next kiss from Kayleen or the next weekly club meeting. She often accused me of caring more for the club and my car than I did for her. I was smart enough to change the subject when that came up.
I knew a few couple guys.
I graduated
like that.
From high school. I prepared to travel to Hawaii to attend college. I reluctantly had to sell my car and my club jacket before I left town. And when I returned home, I was pleased to find that the club was still very active, but there were two problems. One was that the membership was a bunch of younger guys I didn't know. Another was that they didn't seem to be impressed that I was one of the original members. By then, it, of course, didn't really matter because I'd moved to Seattle and I'd begun my Volkswagen driving hippie days. The times, they were a-changin'. Now,
Les yes.
always has stuff to say about the club, and in here I can't you can't see it on the camera, but there is a picture of the original Steeds logo with the horse head and the engine as part of the thing. And the logo has changed a little bit over the years, but not too much. And as a proud member of the Steeds, that's why I wore my shirt today.
Oh yes.
You can see the original logo has been recreated.
Very nice.
And there it is. And It's times like these when I can wear that shirt and the hat, although I didn't wear the hat today because it's hot. But you know what? I'm a member of two car clubs. I'm a member of the Steeds, who was the first car club I joined, and Lance and David Dickinson and the rest of the guys, Bud Worley and some of those guys. Wonderful folks to be a part of a club with. I'm also a proud member of the Rad Bastards Car Club with Mr. Foreman and a whole bunch of really active guys. And I have to say, even though the focuses for those two clubs are kind of different in terms of the iron that you drive, the feeling of family, the feeling of you know, collegial enjoyment of a hobby is really, really the same. It's kind of cool. You could actually own a car of a white, as long as it's older than 1969, it'd work just fine in either club.
Right.
It would work just fine. And the nice thing about it is nobody's like, well, you can't have that car. Nope. Everybody's happy to have a car.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Interesting. What are the requirements of being involved with both clubs? Is there a lot of showing up every week or
that's
dues?
The good thing,
or
the
how's
Steeds,
that work?
Steeds don't have any dues. You got to get voted in by at least three or four members, you know.
Okay.
And you got to have a car. Well, okay, fine. They don't even specify a year. It could be anything.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, and, you know, the Rad Bastards is 69 or older.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some dues, but they're not very much. And
pittance.
A mere pittance. A pittance, as it were.
A coffee a month.
That's right. And yeah, you got to have a car that runs, and I mostly have a car that runs. but you know, it's about getting together and doing the events and having fun and going on cruises. And that, it's as much a social hobby and social clubs as it is anything.
Well, Brady, I know enough about you that when you were heavy into the Harley scene, you were a member of the local Hog chapter.
I was a director of the local Hog chapter.
That's right. And you tend to be a person who jumps right in, gets very involved,
hence
you're involved with this show. And you do that with car shows. You've been putting on car shows in the area. And people know you know that about
year.
You. Well, that's true.
Nobody is.
People know that about you, that you jump in and you get all the way and you're very professional and you're very dependable. And that is an excellent trait to have. On the flip side, I tend to like to jump in, and then I'm like, I don't know if this is really for me. And on the other hand, I do stick forward with shows and doing that. I've been doing that since 2006, 2007. But I've often thought, what would I do if I was part of a club? Because my car isn't going to be running anytime soon for a long time.
Well, you'd call up some of the guys in the club and say, come and help me put this thing together.
Right, and I could come over and help them out.
Yeah, that's how it works.
And sure. So, Ron, what would that be for? Because yours is just the Rat Bastards. And isn't that about just rat rods, or is it more than that?
No.
We're a diverse group. We've got a 1953, Bel Air.
Tom has a beautiful
car.
It is really nice.
Very nice paint job. It's probably, if you have that paint job done today, it'd be about $30,000 paint job.
Right.
Sure. Well, and Jeff has got that, was it 56 Ford, the pickup?
Yes.
It's a beautiful truck. Ford, I mean, it's just gorgeous.
So the benefits of being there is you're building camaraderie, you're building friendships, and it's around your passion for cars.
Yeah. Correct. That's the main thing. And it's family. You know,
and it's family oriented. Yep. Is the Steeds family oriented, or is it mostly just guys?
Oh no. It's there. In fact, there's a whole auxiliary group called the Lady Steeds.
Nice.
I want to say auxiliary, except they're really not. They have their own cars. They do. It's just they're just as involved as the guys.
Yep. Well, I just always wonder because people that listen to the show, I'm sure a number of them are part of car clubs, and others are not. Like
I hope
myself.
So.
And I just find it's a very unique thing. I know that in the world of motorcycling, I was just an independent when I rode, and I couldn't see myself joining a club.
You were a lone wolf.
Yes, I am. Yeah. But I enjoy being around people a lot. I do enjoy people. So maybe that will be something I look into as part of my future.
Well, once you get your garage empty, we can pull your El Camino in there.
Yeah, then I'll be officially actually working on it. Then I can
put the green thing. You got a year from being a... guilty by association to be a full-fledged member.
There you go. Hey, the Nathan Lipinski Weekly Trivia Questions next. Take a peek at next week's show as well. Put it in park. Stick around. We will not go away.
Set the e-brake.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hang on till right after these messages.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Looking for a job worth talking about? Teaching is creative, collaborative, and intellectually challenging. See why teachers have better work stories at teachdfw.org and learn more about becoming a teacher. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
This is Scott Patterson with the Cruising to Colby Car Show, the place to play on Memorial Day. I want to thank our friends here from Horsepower Chrome and Rust for having us down, and we appreciate the day.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Help us if you can. You're an El Camino. El Camino man. Only you can understand.
All right, welcome back. This is Around the Wheel. This is where we talk about upcoming events in the Nathan Lipinski Weekly Automotive Trivia Question. However, before we do that, I wanted to point out that Ron was saying just before the end of the last segment that if it wasn't for the women and the support staff, basically, these clubs wouldn't exist. And Marcia, I got to say nice words about Marcia Foreman. She does as much, if not more, than anybody else in that club. I mean, she is a Trojan, and I'm pretty darn sure that the Rat Bastards wouldn't have been around this long without her.
Nope, that is cool.
She literally hauls the head.
Women have a tendency to really take the reins and those kind of things and run with them.
So this week we got the answer to last week's question, which was kind of a weird one. What I said was Charles Goodyear of the Goodyear Tire and Rubber fame, he actually died penniless, and I was curious if anybody knew why. And Nathan, of course, since it's his trivia question, he actually got pretty close. He wasn't quite there, but here's the deal. Goodyear accidentally discovered the process for vulcanizing rubber, without which, of course, we wouldn't have the high-processed tires we have now. He patented the process. This goes back to like 1850, but he couldn't come up with any practical uses for it.
Wow.
Rubber vulcanizing has been around for a long time, but he couldn't figure out what to do with it, so he died in 1860 penniless, but the Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company was named after him once they figured it out. So, you know, his name lived on,
right,
even though he didn't make a buck out of it.
That's cool.
So I'm going to give this one to Nathan because he was pretty close, but this next one, I'm not sure. This is
you're getting tougher every week.
Well, I got to find stuff because Nathan is the Google champion,
yeah,
you know. But anybody can answer, so you guys got to pay attention to this one. This is now, side mirrors on cars been around for a long time, but remotely adjusted side mirrors, where you'd have to open the window and reach out and do it yourself. Remotely adjusted side mirrors came out in what year? And there's an additional piece of information about that. You need to know the year, but you got to tell me what the secret piece of information that relates to that was. You'll find it. I know you will. Anybody that thinks they know this off the top of their head, you don't know it. But you'll Google it, and you'll find out. So get us at Horsepower Chrome and Rust. You can go to the Facebook page, and you can answer the question there.
Yep.
You can do an email. Contact us at horsepowerchromeandrust.com. And like I say, if you show us your answer and it turns out to be right, you too could win the coveted bucket of genuine Horsepower Chrome and Rust barn find dust, which we had holding the door open.
It was a doorstop
earlier. Yeah. But it's here. It's cool. And we might even throw in the poo that we have here.
So maybe it happens.
Maybe we wouldn't. I don't know.
Well, you know, we were talking about, usually we talk about car shows, and I did mention maybe last week that we were going to do our own car show over at church, and we've canceled that out. And there's still a lot of canceled shows.
Well, I just got the notification today that one of the big shows at the end of the summer, the Edmunds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show here in the Pacific Northwest, that's a big one on the first full weekend of September. Well, it isn't going to happen.
Because they didn't have the earlier one.
Well, it's because the Taste of Edmunds isn't going to happen, and that no food fair, no money. But I just got the word that the Rod Run to the End of the World, which is in Ocean Shores on that same weekend, is also canceled.
Oh, yes. No kidding.
Yep. So, you know, it's been a really horrible year for car shows. Thank goodness for the guys who just get together and do a cruise.
That's
you
what
know,
you got to do. You just got to get together.
Speaking of cruise, they are going to have the cruise. They're not going to have the car show
in Ocean Shores.
In Ocean Shores.
Yeah,
Long Beach.
Yeah.
Long Beach.
Yeah.
Not Ocean Shores.
Well, I mean, they're close.
Well, yeah. They're about 60 miles apart.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Oh, 60 miles apart. That's a long ways. Yeah.
Well, not so much.
Yeah.
You're driving.
The cruise downtown Long Beach, they're still doing that.
Okay.
But Ocean City's not having the car show in Ocean City.
Well, I would say that anybody who's listening to the show, just get together with your friends.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, there's
and just go out and drive and end up at some drive-in and hang out at drive-in and just be like,
maintain your social distancing.
Oh, yeah.
Back to the past.
Exactly.
Hey, you know, we reach over a million car enthusiasts every week. We're still in the top 10 of all the automotive podcasts on Podomatic, and we thank you for that. You can email the show at contact us@horsepowerchromeandrust.com or message us on Facebook. I want to thanks for Stefan Papadakis for being our guest this week. He was cool, and we learned a lot of neat stuff. You can find him at papadakisracing.com. For Ron Foreman and Steve Johan, I'm Brady Wright, saying keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, your foot to the floor. Come on back next week. We're going to do it again on another Horsepower Chrome and Rust.